This is Jan Swift, and you're listening to Discover Lafayette, a podcast dedicated to the people and rich culture of Lafayette, the gateway to South Louisiana. We tape in the offices of Raider, which offers a complete fleet of IT solutions for businesses of all sizes. Raider's motto is, "You just want it to work. We understand." If you're wondering if Raider can help your business, please visit RaiderSolutions.com. I'd also like to thank Iberia Bank for its support. Founded in 1887, Iberia Bank is the largest bank based in Louisiana and is headquartered in Lafayette with 325 combined locations throughout the South. They offer the resources of a national bank with the personal touch of a community bank. Please visit IberiaBank.com for more information. And lastly, thank you for the support of Lafayette General Health. As Acadiana's largest nonprofit, community-owned regional health system, Lafayette General Health is committed to restoring, maintaining, and improving health in the communities it serves. For more information, visit LafayetteGeneral.com. Today, we will focus on civil discourse and political discussions with Jackie Russo and Craig Wall. Jackie is co-founder of Brand Russo here in Lafayette, which she started in 2001. A brand strategist with more than 25 years of experience, Jackie began her career at Creative Artist Agency in Los Angeles and has worked with top names in the entertainment industry. She has published several ebooks on branding and provides media management for local, regional, and national clients. Craig Wall is a history teacher and speech and debate coach at Turlings Catholic High School. He has been a radio DJ for the past 26 years and is currently a radio announcer at Mustang 107.1 and host of the Saturday morning Country Roots program. Most interestingly, I think, Craig, you've been named Teacher of the Year at Northside High, the Lafayette Parish High School Teacher of the Year, the Region 4 High School Teacher of the Year, and finalist for State High School Teacher of the Year. In 2017, Craig was named the Turlings Catholic Teacher of the Year. Quite a career in teaching. So if we can start the show, welcome to Discover Lafayette. And Craig, why don't we let you have a couple of minutes and give more of a background about who you are and what you've done.
Well, I can tell you, first of all, born and raised in the area, born here in Lafayette, lived most of my life in Broussard, graduated from Como, went to then USL.
And no accent.
No, my mom's a Gilbo from South Louisiana. My dad was from Mississippi, so I guess they sort of knocked each other out.
That's also the debater in you.
Yes.
Most debaters don't have accents.
No, definitely. And I was always my aunt who used to babysit me when I was a kid used to say I'd watch the noontime news and I'd go and give her the weather report. So apparently I was always interested in some sort of broadcasting. So that's what I went to school for, mass communication broadcasting with a political science minor. Eventually, my first career was in radio, and that's where I spent the first 10 years after college, working for KXKC 99.1 for 20 years, and then making the transition to Mustang since 2005. That's when I switched to teaching. I often make teachers laugh because when you go to a meeting, they often say, you know, no one ever gets into this job for the money. And I'm like, well, you know, there's worse out there. But no, I still do radio now just for the fun of it and for the love of it. And it's been a part of my life for so long, I can't imagine not doing it. But I've been very fortunate. I've worked with some awesome people. I've learned a lot at every stop I've had when it comes to teaching, and worked with some great educators. And I can tell you, as we'll eventually talk about speech and debate, that I would not have done any of it without speech and debate. I joined my sophomore year of high school. Sandra Broussard, who recently retired from Como, an amazing teacher. We're about to put her in the Hall of Fame, though she doesn't quite know that yet.
Well
deserved.
For
the Louisiana High School Speech League. And when I told my parents that I wanted to do speech, they kind of looked at each other, and then they looked at me and they said, "You do realize you have to talk in front of people."
Were you shy?
Very. I would hardly say anything. But that endeavor, that working in speech and debate allowed me to open up and to take a risk that Craig Wall wouldn't take, but mm-hmm. the character I played did. And then from the interp, the acting side, I eventually switched over to the forensics, the public speaking, learning to write a good persuasive speech and a research a debate case as mm-hmm. well. So everything I've done I don't know what I would be doing had I not gotten involved with that.
Right.
So when I got to Northside, they had had a program. It disappeared. I wanted to bring it back. We had like $1.65 in the account. And so I bought plays out of my own pocket and all that because I wanted the kids to have what I had mm-hmm. in high school. So I saw how much it had affected me and improved where I was. So that's just how I've approached things. And I got a chance to go to Turlings, and I teach there, and I have some amazing kids, including a couple by the last name of Russo.
Indeed.
And I love teaching the history and the civics, and I've been president of the Louisiana High School Speech League the last 4 years. So it's a handful, but it's enjoyable.
But it's service. Thank you for what you do.
You're very welcome.
Are we keeping you from your afternoon show, being here?
A little behind the scenes magic. You can actually record things ahead of time.
No,
so
really?
My voice is actually there, though I'm not. Which used to freak out my youngest daughter when I would bring her home from school. And she's like, Daddy, you're on the radio and here. How does that happen?
Magic.
Magic, baby. Magic.
Magic. Jackie, share your story with us.
Grew up in Lafayette, just like Craig. I transferred from the Academy of the Sacred Heart to Lafayette High as a junior. And walking in as a junior after being in a, I think my Ash graduating class was maybe 40 girls, and my Lafayette High graduating class was 400 boys and girls. Multiple culture shocks on every level that you can imagine. And my first hour class was public speaking with Judy Hadley, who is already in the Hall of Fame.
Yes, she is.
And is iconic in speech and debate circles. And walking in as a junior, you know, when you transfer from one school to another, I was in a number of freshman classes, even though I was a junior in high school, because it was a senior class at Sacred Heart after a freshman class at Lafayette High. And so I was new. The freshmen were new. And so I gravitated to them. And that's, I felt lifelong best friends from the speech and debate program for sure. And quickly figured out, although I too was a little reserved, a little quiet, I had found my home. And luckily had one of the greatest coaches of all time with Judy. She's retired now and lives in Florida. But her skills and knowledge and shoe throwing, she has a lot of encouraging shoe throwing.
I've heard about that, yeah.
Oh, that is a real deal. I still have a bruise on the back of my head.
Would she throw it at the students?
Well, if you're doing the right thing, yes,
you were talking
absolutely.
Too fast.
Yes.
Or something along those lines. You got to get your
or not paying
somehow.
Attention.
Oh, my God.
It was a different time, Jan.
Yeah. Yes.
This was acceptable in those days. And really, I have to say, I deserved
it
just
worked.
About every hit I got, no doubt about it. But so, yeah, and it was across the room, and it was a soft espadrille kind of a shoe.
I
we're not talking about a heel or anything. You couldn't get really hurt. But it was necessary. We were a rowdy bunch. Father Bryce Sibley on my speech and debate team.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, a number. Mm-hmm. You look at most of the leaders in Lafayette, they came out of somebody's speech and debate program, without a doubt. And I don't necessarily know that great people were attracted to it. It turned people into great
people. That's
what
I'm thinking. Using your mind.
It is powerful in every sense of the word. I, because of my time in high school speech and debate, had the opportunity to compete in college. Won 7th in the nation as a freshman, which is usually my lead-in when I meet people for the first time. Jackie Russo, damn glad to meet you. 7th in the nation as a freshman in college. I mean, it's worked for years.
It's hard to top that.
It really is.
Yeah.
It really
six
is.
Others can say better.
Exactly. Exactly. And they weren't freshmen when they did it.
Sure.
But so, no, that set the groundwork for so many things.
Mm-hmm.
And when I moved to Los Angeles, my confidence, my ability to speak up for myself and land jobs absolutely traces back to speech and debate. Starting a company and the work I do now advising people and guiding them goes back to either my time at Sacred Heart and the five goals or my time in speech and debate.
I have a question for you. I know you worked with a lot of big name entertainment, and I didn't go through the whole list, and you've worked with Barry Diller, but were most of the celebrities you met, were they well-spoken in person?
No. No, most of them were not.
They get their lines right. But
absolutely. They're actors. They're not speakers. And those are two very different things. I did have great opportunities, whether it was my time at Creative Artists Agency or at a production company that I helped found or my time with Barry Diller. I got to work with people in front of the camera and behind the scenes that were incredibly talented. But it is an insulated universe. And, you know, if you watch the awards shows and you realize they're thanking each other, they're spending time with each other, it's very confined, very connected. And so getting back into the real world, which was referred to as the flyover states when I lived on the West Coast, because it's just a space you fly over from important coast to important coast, nothing in the middle really matters. It was nice to get back to real people and real life, and I'll take Acadiana over anywhere else every day.
Yeah. Let's get in a plug for Brand Russo. I know you're a brand strategist. You make things fun.
We do.
And you offer workshops.
We do. We started this last year. A section of our building we allocated as a classroom and loaded up with all the toys you need to have a good workshop. And we rent it out for people who are doing lunch and learns and seminars.
Downtown.
It's downtown. Okay. It's in our own building right across from Parc Sanssouci. But really, ultimately, it gave me a place to to play. And so I know that not everybody can afford to hire an agency for their company. But a lot of people want to learn how to do things for themselves. And so we do these brand builders workshops. I have one tomorrow, as a matter of fact. If you go to brandrusso.com/brandbuilders, you'll see the topics, you'll see the calendar, you can register, read more, ask questions, whatever. But it allows me to teach people how to do for themselves. So they know they need social media, but they're not sure how to do it. They know they need to do a better job with their marketing or advertising, put a sales and marketing program together, whatever that might be. Come and spend 4 or 5 hours for a couple $100, and you know exactly how to go do it for yourself. You don't need to hire an agency.
Well, that's quite a service.
Well, we enjoy it. I feel like it lives up to our mission at the end of the day.
And sometimes people do need agencies, but like you said, they just can't afford it.
Well, you either have time or money. So if you have time, then you have the time to learn how to do it better for yourself, or you have enough money, then you don't have the time to do it for yourself, and so you can hire somebody.
Right.
I got you coming and going. Whichever way you are, you either have time, take a workshop, or you have money, hire the agency.
Well, listen, Jackie reached out to me, Craig, recently, and we really had a fun conversation, and it was about political discourse.
Yes.
And it surprised me. Jackie wanted to meet, and we started talking, and I felt so energized when I realized that, I guess it's your debate background, but we started talking about our mutual regret to see some of the shenanigans that you see and hear, mainly hear, from our national politicians and national voices being at the local level here in Lafayette, Louisiana, in a place that's known for its joie de vivre, its family-friendly atmosphere. And politics, I know that they've been divisive, and I can't wait to talk about the history of some of our well-known political figures, but things have really gotten divisive, and it's either all or nothing. And I don't have statistics on this, but I kind of feel most of us are just somewhere in the middle, like either don't really know what we think, but we don't want to be bombarded with negativity and divisiveness. And so when Jackie and I left that day, I said, why don't we do a podcast? And she recommended that I call you, Craig, because of your background in debate. But I want to let you guys talk about your thoughts on civil discourse. And I don't know who would start here, but...
Well, when you mentioned Louisiana, normally has been very insulated from what happens nationally, politically. That goes back a long way. You know, in Louisiana history, it used to be, you know, you had a governor from South Louisiana, followed by a governor from North Louisiana, followed by a governor from South Louisiana, because you had to keep that balance because they're two very different areas, as we all know, especially once you get past Alexandria. But then later, it became Longs versus anti-Longs, right? And so for a long time, Louisiana, it really didn't matter. Republican, Democrat really didn't matter. First of all, there weren't that many Republicans. Yeah. What's the old joke that in the 70s, they could have had their convention in a phone booth, right? Because that's about as many
David
as there
Treen,
were.
David Treen.
Yeah, exactly. And so we don't see that invasion of national politics on the local level really until the last, say, 25, 30 years. And I think a lot of that has to do with the introduction of, you know, talk radio has come into
Rush
its own.
Limbaugh,
absolutely,
about that time.
Who was a pioneer in you know, no one did radio like he did until he came along, and he completely changed it. And so that brings it down to a local level. And then today, you know, social media, it's more than local, it's personal. It's right there in your pocket, and you get it all from all over the country. So I think that has played into why now we're starting to see more of that into this area, because traditionally we have been very different than the rest of the country.
Always.
Yeah.
And Jackie, you're the social media expert. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I'll pick up right where Craig left off. So I take us back to 08, not as far back as he does in the civic side of the history lesson, but the social media history. 08 is when it left college campuses. It became a part of the business environment. People were able to have personal accounts that were professionals. And we saw it start to really permeate into the business world. And so it was in May of 08 that I started doing a show on KPL that I still do every week on Mondays called Brand Buzz, talking about social media and how businesses can use social media properly. The first 3 years, every week, I talked about a different new social media app. It had just launched, what its benefits were, what its challenges were, and how a business could use it. That's every week for 3 years.
That's amazing.
That's 150-something weeks of new app, new app, and then 6 months later, that one's gone. New app. Mm-hmm. And now I haven't had to cover a new app in a long time, but the apps themselves change so much. But what we see, and this happens whether it's teenager to teenager or adult to adult or business to person, we see the insulation behind the keyboard and behind the screen allows people to write things that they would never say in person, that they would never say face to face. And so I think we really saw in the last election cycle, from the 16 presidential election through the 19 mm-hmm. state and local elections, those 3 years, massive drop off in civility and unbelievable increase in anger and people writing hateful things mm-hmm. in messages that were posted by anonymous pages or by groups. And really, it's just a fake page is what right. a lot of people refer to it as, right. Because it's not really backed by an actual person or actual organization. And they've got this megaphone now. And this megaphone has a lot of power. You can reach more people in social media with one post than you can these mm-hmm. days on a lot of TV shows or radio shows or newspapers.
And even if it goes away, if it's deleted, it's not really deleted. I mean, people...
It's all there.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
When you were talking, I was thinking maybe people do this, like businesses competing. But it'd be hard to imagine, like we just had Frank Randall in taping a show, you know, Randall's Restaurant before you guys. It'd be hard to imagine one restaurateur like dissing another restaurant.
It maybe happens all the time.
It does?
Oh, my gosh.
Well, then look at me.
But here's the thing.
I don't even know this.
It wouldn't necessarily
I'm
be
so naive.
That it's a specific person and their specific business page, but they make up an account and do it anonymously.
I'm like, I had a bad experience at this restaurant.
The reviews, we see this all the time with Yelp reviews and Google reviews. It's absolutely competitors posting ugly reviews about their competition. Oh, happens in every market.
I'm so naive. Listen, you know, I just get on there when I need to. I'm not
sure.
Really, I mean, I use social media, but right. not like probably the average person.
No, the reviews have been a big problem.
It.
And a lot of people don't understand how to do it the right way. And so mm-hmm. they end up accidentally revealing their identity. and so then we have to screenshot it and go address it with them and make them take it down. Mm-hmm. But the legit sites, Google My Business, Yelp, that want to be true review sites, they won't let a business take it down themselves. Either the person who posted has to take it down or it has to violate some policies.
Oh.
And so it really is a challenge. And businesses mm-hmm. know this. And they either do it themselves or hire some nefarious companies to post ugly things about their competition to make them look bad.
Now, with these fake pages for political candidates, you know, I know that happened in our last election.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think they could fight it effectively. Like, what? How does that work? I mean, how can somebody actually put up a fake page and then post as if it's the candidate they're making fun of?
I could create a page called Jan Swift, and I could create a page called Craig Wall, and then I could go post comments as if Jan Swift and Craig Wall are saying those things.
And the exact opposite of what we'd actually
Absolutely.
Believe. Yeah.
Absolutely. All day long. It's so easy.
I know that one of the candidates asked Facebook to take it down, but it just didn't happen.
Right.
And we don't need to get into particulars, but it's just unthinkable to me that this could be allowed to happen, but it's
happening,
a crime.
And it's happening often. And it is slanderous or defamation. You know, I'm not a lawyer, except for when I go back into my debate training and pretend to be when arguing with my husband.
Of course.
The only time my legal expertise comes through. But you would think it definitely gets right up to, if not crossing the lines of slander and defamation. Mm-hmm. And yet, Facebook is a huge machine. You're talking about 4 billion users. 4 billion with a B. That's a lot of people that they're supposed to manage, protect, oversee. You know, a couple of fake pages in Lafayette aren't really
right.
something that's high on their concern
True.
List.
Now, Craig, we were talking beforehand and doing a little bit of research for this just so I would have some questions I could ask. I was thinking things had just gotten worse, like we were talking about the last few years, but in fact, politicians back like 1800.
Right?
Absolutely. Thomas Jefferson.
The election of 1800.
Dirty.
Generally considered one of the dirtiest. Yeah. Also the election of 1824.
Oh, okay.
Between John Quincy Adams and Andrew Jackson. That was a nasty
one. The Adams.
One.
The Adams were the common denominator.
Well, you know, the Adams had a bit of a rough edge to them, which I actually kind of like the Adams for that. They're sort of bulldogish in that way. But no, when you look back at the election of 1800, that was not only you were going from Adams to possibly Jefferson, but mm-hmm. that's the beginning of what they call factions and what we call political parties. You know, the Hamiltonians were starting to rally around Adams, and then Jefferson and Madison were basically forming what would become the Democratic Republican Party. And they would never attack each other directly. In a lot of ways, like the fake pages we were just talking about, they would have friends who ran newspapers, and they would put their attacks through the newspaper so that they could appear to be mm-hmm. above and beyond it. But Adams even reported at one point during that election cycle that men who had, and I don't remember the quote exactly, but men who had known each other and were friends their entire lives, if they saw each other coming on the sidewalk, would cross over so that they wouldn't have to acknowledge one another. So it got very personal.
And these guys had written the Declaration of Independence.
Right.
I mean, come on.
Well, you know, I teach honor civics, and for the last couple of years, one of the first things I have my civics kids do is we're sort of studying the foundation of the Constitution. I mean, I take them way back to the earliest law codes, and we see what we took from here and what we took from there, because the Constitution is really just a patchwork of, mm-hmm. you know, everything that came before it and ideas that came before it. But I have them read a book, Carol Burkin. It's called A Brilliant Solution. And it's behind the scenes, and it goes through the convention and the arguments that they had and the potential. You know, we could have had a president one term for 6 years, but, you know, they voted that down. And one reason I like to have the kids read the book is because so many times it seems like we teach it to where, you know, George Washington had like that Heston moment where he comes down off the mountain with a scroll saying, you know, I bestow upon you the Constitution, when in actuality it's they fought. They fought over it, you know, time and time again. Sometimes it got very personal in those arguments. And they did it all in secret so that those things couldn't get out, mm-hmm. so they could be as free as they could be. And there's a lot of compromise and a lot of give and take, and nobody was happy with it when it was done.
But that's a good compromise.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. And so there was, I think they'd kind of be surprised we made it this long. But you do see that it's always been there. You know, and you go to that election of 1824 with the Adams and Jackson people, and you know, there have been some rough you know, back to 1800. Sorry, but Adams people said if Jefferson gets elected, there's going to be guillotines in the streets like they did during the French Revolution, and blood would flow. And
but I got to get this one.
You had
so Jefferson had a political consultant, Jackie.
Yep.
And he accused President Adams of having a hideous hermaphroditical.
Basically, call him a hermaphrodite.
Hermaphrodite,
yeah.
Which has neither the force and firmness of a man nor the gentleness and sensibility of a woman. So making fun of his genitals and, like, I mean, just unbelievable.
Things you wouldn't.
I had to look that word up there.
Yeah.
Is that something? Does everybody else know that but me? Is that like the fake Facebook page?
It might be. It might very well be.
It might be. But yeah, no, that viciousness was there, yeah.
And I pictured them all just kind of being, you know.
Because they're marble busts now.
They're statesmen.
But they were just people. Mm-hmm. But they were just people then, and they were making it up as they went along to the best of their ability. You know, I think where the social media aspect of it has come in is that, you know, it's one thing to read a paper, but it's another thing to have that notification on your hip.
Oh, and, like, and so, like the bing, bing,
exactly.
Bing.
And so I think that's where it's become more personal, and it's brought more people in that maybe weren't paying attention mm-hmm. before.
So, Jackie, I guess human nature hasn't changed.
Right.
But our tools that right. we have
bigger megaphone
have changed dramatically in a very short period of time. So you've got people out there that feel they're invisible, right? Like they think that nobody will really know
who it is. I think they feel empowered. I think that sitting behind a screen and a keyboard, but knowing that they can access tens, hundreds of thousands with one post gives them power. And not everybody, you know, with great responsibility comes great power, with great power comes great responsibility. I don't think everybody's prepared or equipped to have that much power because they're not using it responsibly.
Have you worked on political races? Have you gotten involved in anything?
We have. Mm-hmm. Over the years, it's not our core business model, but we get tapped every couple of years or so, and we've got a pretty good track record. I think we have about a 90% win rate.
Oh.
But it's about building a brand. And
right.
so to me, that's about talking about what you stand for, mm-hmm. not what you're against, what you're going to do to make things better, mm-hmm. Not putting down people. And not every candidate is willing to do that.
Right. I know I ran for office a few years back, and I never filled out the NRA form. It's 14 pages.
Wow.
I mean, it's just incredible.
Sure.
And I'm not a gun person. I'm not against guns. I'm for the Second Amendment. But I didn't fill it out because I didn't really know how to answer it. And
right.
I didn't want somebody answering it for me because I thought that's not the point of this, you know. So I got the zero by the NRA, and then people call me up, what do you stand for? And I was like, well, balanced budget and, you know, things that I thought were important, but I got a really good lesson about what different people think about what is important, you know.
Well, and sometimes I feel that the reach goes a little deeper than it needs to. So when somebody's running for school board, for example, and they get the NRA form, I'm thinking, what school board member gets to vote on the Second Amendments or has any control over background checks or any gun control? No. So that's, we have to remember what lane somebody's in and help them stay in that lane. Mm-hmm. And so when you have somebody who's running for city council or parish council and they're being asked about pro-life or pro-choice, that is never a decision that I've seen on the LCG agenda for a Tuesday meeting.
Right.
And so I appreciate, we want to know more about a person. But let's also remember what capacity they actually have to make change. Mm-hmm. I want them focused on drainage and ditches and roads and bridges, not Second Amendment
right,
or pro-life.
So, Craig, your kids, the students that you teach, mm-hmm. do you have them practice political type of debates, or do you look more at issues?
Well, in the civics class, when we study the legislative branch, I actually take something we do in the speech and debate world, and I bring it in, and that's we do congressional debate. And so the kids actually research and write a piece of legislation on any law that they would like to see passed. So they write a bill or a resolution, mm-hmm. and they have to research and give reasons for it. And then I have them give a short 1 to 2 minute speech of why the bill should be passed. Then I open it up to the floor and they can answer questions, field questions, and then someone can give a speech in opposition to it. So we work a little bit in that area. You know, I have kids that represent, you know, all over the political spectrum. On my speech team, I've got very conservative to extremely liberal. Uh-huh. And so their talks are fascinating when you mm-hmm. sit and listen to them, when they actually are backing it up with something other than, you know, ad hominem attacks or, you know,
how they feel. Yeah.
Which I think that is what I've seen a lot of, even on the speech and debate circuit, is that when it comes to persuasiveness, appeal to emotions always got to be a part of it. You know, ethos, pathos, logos. You got to have all of that, you know. But I think the emotion part here lately has been what people have really focused on. And I think that's mm-hmm. why so many of the attacks have become so personal. Because there is so much of how do you feel, mm-hmm. not necessarily, you know, the logic or even the evidence that backs that up.
Right. And Jackie was mentioning that the anger that seems to be out there. You know, you talked about brand strategy. For politicians, they only have like maybe 30 seconds on TV or the radio, or I know there's a lot more on social media because it's a lot more affordable, but how do people that want to rise above this rhetoric and the anger and the, you know, not worrying about the facts but just how they feel, how can you rise above that?
Well, I think it really starts all the way back with why are they running in the first place? And so not everybody gets into political office, I think, for the right reasons. And so it's not always to serve and to give back to a community. It's for their own self-gain. That's where I think sometimes we get tied into those emotions. I also think that if everybody had to go to high school and college debate, we'd have a whole different world. Mm-hmm. Because, and Craig mentioned this, we're trained as debaters in one day. We'll have to debate for something twice and against something
Correct.
Twice.
That's the format of either, well, all of the debates we do, Lincoln Douglas, which is one person against one person, or, you know, policy debate,
which we used to call CX.
Right, cross-examination.
Oh.
What we do is they're given a resolution, and it says resolve, and then whatever it is, and they have to research both sides, because round one, you might be for the resolution, but round two, you're going to be against it.
Hmm.
So you have to be, even if you don't agree with it, you have to be able to research, you have to be able to come up with argumentation that can persuade people, even if you're not 100% for it,
mm-hmm.
which I think is also that's good. We joked earlier, I use that in my class. You know, I am very political. I always have been. I'm fascinated by it. I was a political science minor. And so my kids always want to know who I vote for. And of course, I never tell them. You know, I want them to discover what they want to vote. Don't take my word for it. Mm-hmm. Go figure it out. So it's always a big contest in class to try to figure out where Mr. Wall is. And so I like to have fun with that. But I think my background allows me to do that. I can make an argument for a position I don't necessarily agree with, but still come off convincingly enough mm-hmm. that I kind of throw them off. And that's a skill. You're not just born with that. You have to develop that. And speech and debate forces you to do that. You know, the current Lincoln Douglas topic is resolve. Predictive policing is unjust. So you've got to be able to come up with affirmative and negative arguments and be able to debate both sides of the issue despite what your own personal opinion may be.
And I think that's really important. I think those are life skills that are lacking these days. Because that particular topic, for example, I would have to do the research and come up with 3, 5, 7, 9 reasons why it is better, why it is not better. Mm-hmm. And when you do that much research, when you dig that deep into a topic, you do quickly learn there's a lot of gray in the middle.
Right.
Mm-hmm. It's not always black and white. There are some times when this is a good thing, and there are some times when that is a bad thing. And so you start to see every topic from both sides. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I mentioned earlier, and I've said this before a lot recently, very few people are really 100% Republican or 100% Democrat. Mm-hmm. We're shades of it. And so the more we dig into issues and the more we learn, the more we find ourselves on a spectrum on this topic mm-hmm. and maybe somewhere else on the spectrum for that topic. So it's not always black and white. We don't always agree with everyone's opinion and position 100% of the time. I don't even necessarily agree with my own position from 10 years ago on a topic, because we grow and we evolve and we mm-hmm. learn and we mature. And so to just say I'm this 100% of the time, all the time, that's not necessarily accurate.
And you know, I don't know if this makes sense, but I have some friends that are far left and far right.
Sure.
And I really believe that most issues, 95% of us kind of want the same thing. We'll disagree on the 5%. Mm-hmm. And those are those hot button issues, abortion, guns. But most of us want safe communities. We want good education for our kids, for other people's kids.
Houses that don't flood.
We want safe. Yeah. We just want a police force that's, you know, able to have what they need to do their jobs. And yeah, we don't want flooding. No one wants flooding, especially here. But it can be hard to hear the other person when you're just thinking, no,
right,
I don't agree. Right. Even if you're not really listening to their reasons why, if they have reasons why, you know.
Mm-hmm. So that brings us back to debate and really learning how to properly research a topic and learn about it inside and out so that you become almost an expert on it. Very few high schoolers are an expert on anything other than being high schoolers.
Are you sure? Because they're pretty certain that they're experts on it.
They're quite certain that they're experts on everything.
I've had some interesting conversations.
I have four that live in my house. So very aware of their expertise in life.
Yes. I'll give them a few years and they'll be embarrassed. You know, it's so funny to watch.
Right. But again, it's that maturity. Mm-hmm. It's that growing up process and
humbling.
Realizing, it's a lot of humbling. I think that a lot of people take a certain position on a topic until they have kids mm-hmm. and then they see that topic from a different angle mm-hmm. or until they're married and they see that topic or until they have a career and a profession and a job, all of a sudden,
that's why mom and dad mm-hmm. did this or that.
Exactly.
Yeah. So we didn't even talk if I would be asking you this, but do y'all have advice? You know, are there things you'd like to share that we haven't talked about encouraging more civil discourse? Or did you just want
to put your kids into the speech and debate program at whatever school they go to immediately?
And hopefully that school has one.
Right.
That's been an issue that we've had over the last few years, is
funding.
That we don't have as many programs as we used to.
That's so sad.
And there's a couple of reasons for that. One, it is very time consuming and not a lot of young coaches are all that interested in hopping in and spending the weekend after weekend after weekend at speech and debate tournaments. But also just the programs have been cut over the last few years, you know, with the emphasis, and obviously nothing wrong with emphasizing English and, you know, ACT scores and all that. Totally understand that from the educational world. But a lot of times the fine arts programs and the debate programs are the first ones that get gone. Mm-hmm. And that's unfortunately just the way it's been. So we used to have in the Louisiana High School Speech League, probably back in my day, probably 75, 80 programs around the state. Today we're more 35, 40.
Holy cow.
Yeah, there's a lot less.
Are there more in one part of the state, or is that just...
You know, Lafayette has a very strong speech and debate community.
Uh-huh.
Most every high school here has one. And the surrounding areas like Cecilia and Kaplan and Abbeville, mm-hmm. they have one as well. New Orleans is coming back. It's still, you know, it was once a hotbed.
It was dominant.
Yeah,
in the
80s. Oh yeah,
in the 90s. Yeah,
those Jesuit debaters put me around the block more than once.
Yeah,
but you know, a lot of those programs have disappeared, obviously, after you know, the Katrina situation. But it has come back in certain areas, but not full force. Not a lot in the Baton Rouge area. Which I always thought was interesting, because there's the capital city, and you would think...
And all those private schools.
You know, right.
Exactly.
Schools.
It's just now we've gotten a couple of programs over the last few years in Baton Rouge. Lake Charles used to have some programs, but they don't anymore. Alexandria area has a couple. North Louisiana has very few. You know, Lafayette has been very supportive of it, but even here we've lost some. So, unfortunately, there's not a lot of opportunities for a lot of them, and that's a shame, because... It is so beneficial, no matter what you plan on doing in your life, to have those skills behind you.
Right, right. Any encouraging words for, what about adults that are already through school?
You know, I think that it's about getting educated on issues, and it's about, and it's hard. We have busy lives. Everybody does. And to break out of your bubble and spend the time to get educated on issues or on people who are running for office, that's a hard thing to do and take time away from your life. But not to sound melodramatic, the future of our country depends on it. When I see voter registration falling off, I see actual voting falling off, I realize we've got some voter fatigue. We're not energized as a base. And I don't know if that's just because there's an assumption that this area is going to be red forever. But we didn't used to be. I mean, the whole state was Democrat. Craig was talking about that. You know, we've transitioned into being a Republican stronghold over the past three decades or so. But it won't stay that way forever. And so it's about people really getting educated and staying on top of it and showing up. It is the greatest privilege we have as Americans is our right to vote. And it is appalling to me that I see a sub 50% voter turnout ever. There are people who literally still die in the world for the right to vote, and we take it for granted.
Right. I know there's a growing number of independents in Louisiana. I don't know how the younger voters will register as they age out, and who knows what they'll do. But as you were talking, Jackie, I was thinking about the decline also in people that attend organized religious services and the declining number, Craig, of people that vote. And, you know, I just wonder what, it's not like the world's going to come to an end, but it's a shame that we, you know, some of these traditions have gotten us where we are. I mean, they were built by our founding fathers.
And there was always a sense of community historically that I don't really see that much anymore. Civic organizations, I think, have seen their membership fall off dramatically the last 20, 30 years.
People are at home more individually on their
Absolutely.
Devices.
Absolutely. You know? Right. And so you don't get out. Ben Franklin, for example, gave money to, I forget how many, but every church in Philadelphia he gave money to, even those he was not a part of, because he just felt that that was an important part of the community that needed to be supported, you know, along with the libraries that they had then and other civic organizations that they felt that if you had that tie to the community, then you're going to care and you're going to show up and you're going to vote. Whereas when we become more isolated, you know, what affects my bubble and what doesn't? And, you know, I don't want to be bothered by this, so I'm just going to ignore it. And so that makes it easy to sometimes not even know that there's an election, which... I'm sure Jackie's children have mentioned, when there is an election, I always show the results, and I always get on my little soapbox and say, what? It's 17%, y'all, 17%.
Yeah, it's sad.
And it's
horrifying.
Really bad. But I think we're seeing that lack of community involvement on a lot of different levels, and I think it's just showing up most dramatically in the voting part.
I have to laugh when I think back as on the candidate side, when I would knock on doors. You know, a lot of people, I ran twice, actually, first in 2006-07, and then in 2015, and I could see a dramatic shift from people that would even answer the door when you knock.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But sometimes they answer the door in their underwear.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Well,
that was all. I could have used some debate skills. I just remember speechless, you know.
I actually,
and they're like, you want to come in? No, no, thank you.
Not like you put pants on.
Yes. I worked on a number of campaigns. I volunteered in the 90s and then into college. And I can recall, and I would, and I tell the kids when, you know, I don't tell them who I campaigned for, but I talk about my experiences. And I said, you know, when I would call people, I'd more than likely get the phone hung up on me. But when I would go knock on doors, people were much more receptive. They're less likely to slam the door in your face than they are to slam the phone down or turn the phone off.
But that was in the 80s and 90s.
In the 80s and 90s. Yeah. And I mean, I'm sure that has changed, but it still makes a difference, that face-to-face interaction versus the separation that the technology can sometimes give.
Mm-hmm. Sure. When I was in college, I was in the College Republicans and actively campaigned and worked and loved it. But it is a whole different world now. Because of the devices, people aren't as inclined to answer the phones. We don't even have house phones, most people. Mm-hmm. They're not as inclined to answer the door. There's crazy people out there. And so now it's harder to get to them to give them information. And so we have to hope that they, in turn, choose to seek out that information to educate themselves.
Right.
And that's not happening, which is why you have 18% voter turnout.
And maybe one thing, going back to what you mentioned about people who are out of school and how they may become more civil in their discourse, you're going to be looking at your social media. Someone is going to post something that is going to fire you up or something along those lines. Maybe it can be as simple as just asking yourself, huh, I wonder if that's true. And then going and looking at it and researching it right then and there when mm-hmm. it's right there on your phone. I mean, you can Google right there on your phone too.
Yeah, the internet.
You know, the internet's right there. So perhaps it's that simple. Just instead of, oh, and then, you know, mute or block. Mm-hmm. Let me see where they got that from. And then maybe that'll lead you into a different direction, or it may just solidify where you are right then. But at least you've taken that step to do more than just make an angry outburst about it.
Right.
It's worth a shot.
You always have to consider the source. And I think a lot of people share things without thinking, is this accurate? Is it factual? And sometimes even just checking the date. I see people sharing things that were originally posted 3, 4, 5 years ago, and they're posting it as if it's new today. Mm-hmm. And that just perpetuates the myth.
Right, but it's new to them, so they think it's newsworthy.
But take a minute and just think, you know, if this thing that I'm going to post or share, is it kind? Is it true? Is it going to make the world a better place? Is it going to matter in 5 months, 5 years, five decades? And if not, then maybe it's not worth sharing.
Yeah.
I had a program director tell me once that if I was going to open up the microphone on her radio station, I had to think of the following. Whatever I'm about to say, would I say it to my mom? Would I say it to my best friend? Would I say it to my significant other? Would I say it to my grandmother? And would I say it to my priest?
Yeah.
And if the answer is no to any one of those, don't say it.
Right. I mean, that's what I teach kids in social media class.
26 years in radio and I haven't been fired yet.
But so you know, no FCC fines.
Not to my knowledge.
Then you're all right.
No, that was all off the air. We're good.
But that's what I teach kids in social media class. And one of the things that I do these workshops, I travel all over. I write out on a piece of paper the words, what are you doing here? And I bring two kids up and I tell one of them to say it one way. And I tell one of them to say it another way. And so they will say, what are you doing here? With joy and enthusiasm. And the other one, what are you doing here? With anger and disdain. And then I show it up on the board and I say, if you just saw this posted, you don't know which tone it means. So you're going to hear in your mind a tone based on a whole lot of things not having to do with those words. So you've got to give people the benefit of the doubt. You've got to sometimes separate from the board and find out. But think about when you're texting, posting, Snapchatting, any of it, you don't always know the intention behind what they're writing. So don't assume. Find out.
Right. And you know, it's good legal advice too. Just as words are important, spoken words, to think before you text, write an email because it's never going to go away. And then you probably, if you have done something out of anger, like you're saying, down the line with experience, you may really regret it.
Right.
And it's, you know, I was reading something today by Richard Rohr. He's a monk. He writes, you know, religious. It's beautiful writing. But he talked about respect. But it was R-E-S-P-E-C-T. I sound like Aretha Franklin. But he said the original term meant to look back, like to go back for a second time, to look at before you say something or write something. And I think that's,
well, we've lost that meaning.
But I'd like to encourage that for respect of others. You know, before you say something or write something out of anger, to stop and take a second look, like you're saying. Don't assume what somebody means until you find out more. So,
yeah, I actually had that situation occur last year. I'm being on the Louisiana High School Speech League Executive Council. Sometimes we have to, we have situations that arise. And I got an email from a colleague, you know, another speech coach, and I was not happy about what I received. And so I had to write an official response. And so I waited till the next day. Mm-hmm. And then when I did write it, I sent it out to the council and I said, okay, you guys read this and let me know if it's okay. And I remember one person on the council emailed me back and said, man, thank God you're the president because I would not have written that. I said, well, that was the second one I wrote.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, the first one's a lot shorter and not nearly as nice.
More to the point.
Yes.
Four letters in the words.
Yeah. And so I said, we're going to go with this one. But sometimes mm-hmm. you just have to take that step back and get those emotions under control.
Right.
And or else edit. You may regret, especially if it's written down, it's going to stay.
Right.
Even if it's just screenshotted somewhere, it's going to stay.
It's going to stay.
Someone's going to have it somewhere.
And it'll come up when you least want it to.
When you think back to our time frame, when we were in school and passing notes, it literally was a note. We would write a note, mm-hmm. we would pass it. And even if it fell into the wrong hands, multiple, a dozen people might see it. Mm-hmm. Now, when there's a Snapchat or an Instagram post or a TikTok video, it's not seen by a dozen. It's seen by thousands. And so I have to, you know, stand in front of fourth, fifth, and sixth graders and talk to them about the damage that you're going to do to their lives. Fourth, fifth, and sixth graders are not worried about the future. They're worried about getting through recess and lunch and after-school snacks.
Unless they're being bullied, then they don't want a future.
But they don't even, they can't think that far into the mm-hmm. future. They can't even think about the next step. And so for them to have to realize the power that the device holds for them and against them, it's a very tenuous relationship that we have with technology. Mm-hmm. We're more connected than ever before, and we're also more disconnected than ever before.
Right. Well, we're here today with Jason Sikora of Raider, and thank you, Jason, for taping our show. And you've been writing a lot of notes.
I have been writing a lot of notes. In the last 5 to 10 minutes, I think have been fascinating because you guys made a lot of really good points that I think people need to keep in the back of their head. One that we even talk about at home a lot is the intention behind the words.
Sure.
You can't hear tone in words on a Facebook message. And then you get these long debates that the person maybe even didn't even mean it the way it was presented to the next person. They just took it that way, which goes back to what you said about face-to-face. Mm-hmm. If there's a politician that's running, that's walking around my neighborhood, and I can talk to them for a minute and just see them, they're more likely to stick out in my head because I actually got to see them and talk to them and get their opinion and ask questions versus reading something I saw on a website somewhere. And the same thing when we have these debates, I'd rather talk to somebody than go back and forth on Facebook. I just avoid politics on Facebook because you don't go anywhere. You don't get anything done. And when you talk to somebody, all of a sudden you hear the tone and you get to understand like their feelings behind it and why they believe that, or maybe they didn't even do any research. And Jack, you brought up another good point. It's easier to find info. I think both of you guys mentioned this. It's easier to find info because it's in our pocket. Mm-hmm. It's also easier to fake information.
True.
Which brings me over to my last comment before questions. And we talked about fake accounts. And I was almost tempted to do it, Jan, and create a page. This is Jan Swift with a picture that you took. And just to show how quickly I could do it.
They're always getting me on cybersecurity, too.
Right.
This is like killing me.
Yeah. Well, remember when we had some guests and they ended up in the paper and they actually took the picture that we took downstairs, cropped you out, and then use that.
Uh-huh.
I would just take the other side of it, the part they cropped, and make that your Facebook page, and then just say whatever I want. And what's scary about that is now with deepfakes, and I have all of this, I have your voice over so many hours of podcasts.
But do you know what he means with deepfakes?
Yeah.
The technology is crazy.
I act like it's me talking.
Absolutely.
I could feed it into,
I hate to put this thought out there,
a computer and get it to say whatever I want you to say, and then post it, and this is what Jan Swift thinks.
Yeah.
And that's scary,
right?
Especially coming up. Mm-hmm. So we have to be even more vigilant about like where is this coming from? What's the source? You know, did you really have a fake microphone on you during this conversation? All right. So social media, fake news, fake accounts. Is this going to get worse before it gets better?
Yes. Or,
okay.
Yeah.
We don't see a light at the end of the tunnel.
Well, there's no going back. I can't turn back the clock. We're not going to eradicate the technology. You know, every time I read an article of somebody saying, well, hopefully Facebook will just go out of business soon.
Oh, no.
Did you miss the part where I said there's 4 billion users? They are printing cash. They're not going out of business. So what it is about us getting smarter about how to use it, and making better choices and how we use it, and educating ourselves and empowering our kids to make good choices, because they don't know a world without this. They are digital natives. They're born into this land. Mm-hmm. We're immigrants there. Well, Jason, you're kind of a native.
I remember rotary phones.
Okay. All right. Good. Yeah. Excellent. And so really it's about us learning how to harness the tools we have. You know, electricity was ground shaking. Yep. TV was transformative. This is just the next evolution in technology.
Boy, what's Act 4 going to be? And it's coming soon.
It's coming.
Yep. All right. Lighten it up just a hair. What's the favorite part of your jobs?
Cool. I'll tell a story from last year. I had this one student, and she was a senior last year, and she was on the speech team for 4 years, okay? And one of the sweetest young ladies you'll ever meet, and she did original oratory, which is where you research a topic. It's your persuasive speech on anything you want. You research it, you write it, you learn it, and you give it. She never had success at a speech tournament. Like, she tried. Oh, she just
4 years.
4 years, right? And in her second-to-last tournament last year, it was the Kaplan High tournament, she not only made it to finals, she placed first.
Wow.
And as much of those as my kids have achieved, you know, and we've had done well at state, we've gone to nationals, mm-hmm. I've had a top four in nationals once, you know, that was one of the coolest moments I ever had as a teacher. Because here's a kid that could easily have given up, but she always had a smile on her face. And to see her, you know, achieve that, made all the long nights and the short morning and all that, made it completely worth it. Mm-hmm. So when you see a kid who, when they first walked into your door, can barely get out a sentence or look you in the eye, and then when they leave, you know, the confidence that they have, you know, that's why you it's come beautiful. Back each day, and that's why, as tired as you are at the end of the weekend, you do it again next weekend.
Excellent. How about you, Jackie?
So, you know, really my role as a mom is the one that I'm more into than any job I have. And so raising the four kids that I get the privilege of raising every day is awesome. And so watching them succeed, whether it's in speech and debate or volleyball or baseball or academics or arts, having two in college and now two in high school, every day that I get to keep them alive is a good day. It's a good, good day. Professionally, the wins for us are when our clients get results. You know, when we can have a good return on investment for them, we can see them growing. Those are good days. And the workshops I'm teaching right now is a lot of fun because that's some instant gratification.
Yeah.
They, in 4 hours, they get it, they learn it, they leave with a plan. And so I love that. So I am very, very fortunate. I get to have a lot of wins on a regular basis.
Excellent.
Which is kind of fun.
Nice. Well, I like the reference to your family, and big shout out to your family. I'll just go back in the Wayback Machine. Not even way back.
Way back.
The few years ago when my wife and I decided to start cleaning up Lafayette and doing those the garbage pickups.
Oh, yeah.
The first one we did was Fiberger Field, and you showed up with your kids,
yep.
and we gave you garbage bags. We cleaned up that whole field in just a couple hours.
Oh, yeah.
And it was spotless, and you were the only ones to show up.
Right.
It was just me, my wife, and then you guys, and we nailed it.
But we love that. And yeah. I have to say, I was so glad that Jody started that program and kind of planted that seed in their minds, because my girls still love to go and find ways to help in the community, whether it's working at Animal Aid or picking up trash. My number three calls me as she's driving now and says, I see a lot of trash on the side of Evangeline Thruway and Willow. Can we go pick up right there? I said, that's a busy intersection. But sure, maybe on a Sunday morning when the traffic's not as heavy and not as fast, I still have my picker-upper thing. We'll head out there. And so
excellent.
That's the plan for the weekend.
Good. Good for them. That was fun. And we still, you can't walk by a piece of garbage now, without picking it up and throwing it away.
Absolutely.
Just keep it clean.
Right.
All right. Well, this is called Discover Lafayette. You came back to Lafayette. You're still in Lafayette.
Still out, yeah.
What attracts Lafayette to you?
I'll go first.
Yeah, you go first.
So I like to think of myself as a boomeranger. You know, there's a big push on the brain drain in the 80s, and I left in 92 and didn't think I was coming back. I mean, I went to a big, fast career in a big, fast town and make a lot of money and city lights and all that. And then realized my pull back to a place that, you know, growing up, everybody knowing everything about you is not very appealing. Now, as an adult, being in a place where you can walk into anywhere and know somebody is the greatest thing I think you can have. And so the city didn't change. My perspective did. And now I can't imagine a better place to raise my kids. And when I think about the four of them and hoping at least one lands back here, you know, chances are slim. Because there are bigger opportunities in other markets. And so we'll see what happens. But I love what I like to call the F's of Lafayette: faith, food, family, festivals, fun, and football.
Nice.
It sounds like David Calicott.
Yeah, exactly. I was going to say, yeah, I've heard this before.
You've probably coached some of the Lafayette General.
We did their advertising for 8 years. Yeah. And so I've had the great privilege of working with David and Patrick Andy and the whole team there. And,
yeah, he shared that on this podcast, yeah. And I thought that does kind of sum up
I'm pretty sure he might have heard that from me, because I've said that for a long time now.
I don't know.
But he said it to you first, so he'll get the credit today.
Yeah, it's old news for me.
Yeah.
Right.
Jackie.
Right.
You know, there were times in college I thought about, you know, possibly going somewhere else. And with my first career being radio, I sort of expected, because that's just the world of radio DJs, as you bounce from station to station to station, from market to market, moving up. But you know what? I found myself working at a really great organization with some fantastic people with unbelievable talent. And I was enjoying it too much to leave. Yeah. And I knew I was in a special place, and knew from talking with other people in the business that don't leave someplace if you don't absolutely have to. Mm-hmm. And so I wound up staying. And now with Speech and Debate, I get to travel. You know, we go to national tournaments. This year we're going to Chicago, Albuquerque. That'll be interesting in June.
Harvard? You'll be at Harvard next week?
Well, no, I'm not going. I'm sending my co-coach. She's going to Harvard. She can take the 5-degree Saturday morning.
Right.
I went in 2016. It was -9 with a wind chill -22. Lafayette sounds pretty good after you go through something like that. But I still get to travel and see those places, but it's, you know, you just come back and it's home. And that's all, you know, my family's here. My mom and dad are right next door to my wife and I and the kids. And, you know, my oldest daughter's now at LSU and my youngest daughter's 6, and we're just part of our little community here. Yeah. And, you know, I can still go visit other places. Mm-hmm. And every once in a while I go, man, maybe I should have, you know, but you are where you're supposed to be. And that's kind of how I look at it. I've seen so many people, you know, do what Jackie did that were my age that left. I often joke we could hold our next class reunion in Texas, because that's where the majority of people are. There's like a Como commune up around the Dallas-Fort Worth area. But, you know, so many of them talk about what they miss when they're up there.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, yeah, well, I can just go grab a king cake. I don't, you know, you poor people, you got to import it.
And boiled crawfish.
Exactly. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
It is never the same if you're not eating it right here.
Yeah, you grass is always greener, but at some point you just appreciate where you are. And, you know, I found my little niche, hopefully.
Yeah.
Hopefully they'll keep me around at Turlings a while. Yeah.
Well, I have a little story to share, Jason. Yeah. I moved here in 83 after law school, thinking that I was just going to be here a little while. Mm-hmm. And I actually rented the house that Jackie owns now. I mean, I rented the upstairs.
How funny is that? Small. Wow. That is a Lafayette story.
Yeah, because I'm not going to say your address, but when I was meeting with Jackie, I said, yeah, I lived and blah, blah, blah. And she goes, well, that's my address.
That's my house.
I know. Creepy. But anyway, I thought it was just going to be a short-term move out on the way to Texas or something. And I've never wanted to leave. It's just a beautiful community.
It's special.
Yeah, it is really special. So
it is.
Yeah.
Well, thank both of you for being here today. I think everybody probably has to listen to this podcast at least once, if not a second time through, just to really absorb everything that you guys, all the information, I think is, I mean, social discourse and just speech and debate, it's all very, very important. So thank you for being here, for taking time out of your day.
Thank you.
And Jan, thank you.
Thanks for having
me. Thank you so much. I want to thank our listeners for tuning in, and please look up some of this. Look up Jefferson and Adams, and we didn't talk about Lincoln-Douglas debates, but there's so many things people can look up when they look up political discourse.
And we're fortunate, and I know we're kind of running short, but next month, two of our national qualifying tournaments are going to be here in Lafayette at Turlings and at Southside High School, and our state tournament of champions is at David Thibodeau STEM Magnet Academy. So if anyone, we are always looking for judges, so if anyone is interested.
What dates?
The first weekend in March is at Turlings. The second one is at Southside, and the last weekend is the state. And I'd be happy to give anyone information to judge and come and see what these kids do.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
That's great.
Well, and judging doesn't take skill or history or experience. Nope. It's about being persuaded. And so if you aren't on the circuit and you haven't done it, you're the perfect judge because you're the hardest to persuade. Mm-hmm. And that's a true judge of good success.
And where can people get more information about this?
Well, you could always email me, cwall@tchs.net. I'd be happy to answer any questions and pass along any schedules and see what we could work into your schedule to come out and help us judge, because finding judges is always an issue for us at tournaments, and you can't have a tournament without judges.
Right.
So we need to get feedback for the kids, because that's what they live on, too.
Yeah.
Jan, I think this is perfect for you.
I know.
Well, oh, absolutely.
I've judged in the past. It's been a while, though, so I'll give that some thought.
Back.
Yeah.
Good times.
I know. They'll probably blow me away with their brilliance.
they are something to see.
I know. I remember that from when I judge. Well, thank you both for joining us, Jackie Russo and Craig Wall. And thanks to our premier sponsors also, Iberia Bank and Lafayette General Health. Couldn't do this without them or without Raiders. Jason, thank you. On behalf of Discover Lafayette, this is Jan Swift.